history and heritage are priceless, right? Like the storytelling, which you guys are experts in, is where this is all going to be. That's what brand packaging is happening now. Logos. Everyone has a cool logo. Gives a shit. Storytelling is, that's it. That's the final frontier for these brands, is how to tell a story.
Got Rama here on the podcast today. Rama is the president of Green Street Agency, co-founder of Hall of Flowers, owner of a bunch of fucking dope brands, master marketer extraordinaire. Thanks for coming on the podcast. We kind of already technically started, but
no, it's good. This is like
had to
like,
give you your intro.
It's like the cool podcast when like they like start it in the middle and then they cut back. You know?
Yeah, there's we kind of just go all over the place here, but
yeah, thank you. Episodes in, we're fucking vets now.
Yeah. How many? 10?
Yeah, something maybe.
Probably 9 or 10. Yeah,
this will be the best one for sure.
Yeah, no. Definitely. Yeah, 100,000 views.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, thank you. But yeah, thank you for welcoming me here. I appreciate the time and everything.
So, what else did you do when you were younger to break the law? Let's get into
skateboarding, dude. It was all skateboarding.
Yeah,
straight up skateboarding everywhere.
So when did you start skating?
I bought a Jeff Kendall Graffiti, 1986. I guess it would have been whenever that came out. I went there to buy Tony Hawk skateboard, and the guy was like, "Bro, you don't want that. I'm telling you, buy this one instead." And I did.
Yeah.
And of course, it changed my life. It's actually interesting because the way I look at the person at the skate shop counter and the record store counter is the bartender.
Exactly.
Can you guys say the same thing? Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's the most influential, right? So, but yeah, skateboarding then, and it was like Tony Hawk and Bones Brigade were out, you know, and that was happening, and we watched fucking, you know, Animal Chin every day, and that's where it started. Chin, yeah, right. Exactly. And then even like probably like Future Primitive, I think, was probably just coming out then. And now Craig Stesek, who made all those movies, is like a dear friend of mine. Yeah. He texts me like every couple days. I fucking can't believe it. It's insane. He's like my childhood hero, and I wouldn't be my most influential person in my life probably.
Crazy.
And now he's like a good friend. But yeah, I was growing up skateboarding. It was in Boston. It was illegal, like crazy illegal, you know. Skateboarding is not a crime style. And it was like Rat Bones and a yellow Jeff Kendall and probably some going trucks that were weird. And my mom like cut out my graffiti with or my grip tape with me like on the top and made like cool indie logos and all this stuff. And did all the whole thing, you know. And then and everyone else in my town was like riding Fairflexes. So even when we grew up super poor, the one thing that my mom did splurge on was getting me a skateboard. That was probably like as much as like our car was in the beginning, you know.
Yeah,
like, yeah, just, you know, 100 bucks was crazy.
Yeah, spending that extra 40 bucks goes a long way on your kid's first skateboard.
Yeah,
so you get him a board that doesn't roll, he's not gonna give a shit about skateboarding. Just spend the extra like 30 bucks.
That's right. Stuff. I never thought of it that way, but that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
It goes far. Where was it? In Boston, outside of Boston?
In the suburbs, in a town called Hudson. So between Worcester and Boston.
Okay.
Basically 45 minutes directly west of Boston.
Okay.
And then my neighbor across the hallway, who passed away from a drug overdose when I was in college, or in high school, I guess, he, Casey O'Gorman, RIP, he and his friend, Chuck, what's Chuck's last name? Fuck, I'm blanking on it. They were like a couple years older and they would crush it. They were unbelievable.
This thing wasn't even fucking recording.
Oh no.
But okay. Let's,
yeah, get your fucking shit together, guys.
So we just cut the good audio in for you guys.
Good.
We're back.
Sorry about the audio.
We don't the blunt got doing. Me.
It's only the 10th episode.
So yeah. As I said, we're killing it. We're vets.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, last night I watched the History of Burnside Thrasher documentary for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so I'm still like obsessed with skateboarding. And even everything I do now, like, skateboarding is everything to me, right? In punk rock, right?
I was going to say, how much of that was music? Like, how much of the music shit did you pull from skating? Is that how you got, like, into the punk
first,
and the whatever?
Yeah, because the videos.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, oh, what's this band? Like, you know, whatever, blah, right. blah, you know? And so then it was Bones Brigade, and then that was in the beginning, and then it went through, and it was, like, of course, like, Blind and, you know, Mark Gonzalez and Tim Gavin, who, you know, we all know.
Oh, we're seeing him tomorrow.
Yep. Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, are you going at the Cultivation or no?
They're going at 12.
Are you going to be there tomorrow?
I'm going there at 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, it was like growing up watching those guys. And then in high school, I went to X Games. And it was the first one.
In Boston.
It was in Rhode Island.
The first one.
Rhode Island.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah. And we went there and I'll never forget, like, it's actually a pretty interesting story. And I had been tattooed by a guy named Jeff Whitehead. Jeff Whitehead also did all the tattoos. He did a lot of work for Antihero, and he did the everything on Jamie Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when Jamie Thomas won the X Games, but he was, like, homeless before he won. You know, he won the street section, and but he didn't. He literally was homeless like then.
Yeah.
And we're I'm sitting there, and we're skating around this parking lot, and there's just a dude skating by himself, and I'm like, that's fucking Jamie Thomas. And we roll over there, and he's at a grocery store, and then Ed Templeton comes out, and maybe Gershon Mosley, and Deanna came out, and I was like, what? Oh my God. Like this, cause you're in Boston.
Yeah,
this
is
like,
these are
the kings of it. You don't see this. So, so they came out and they were like, oh, we got to go. And I was like, where are you going? They're like, oh, we got to go back to the thing. It's a couple miles. We got to skate. And I was like, well, we got a car. You want to get in? So like we all piled in the car and then we went back to like their dorms and then they were like, you want to come up and hang out? So we went up and hung out with Jamie Thomas. Like, yeah, of course we want to. So like we're hanging out with Jamie Thomas and he gave me the board that he won X Games.
Shut
with.
The fuck up.
Yes. Crazy. And then it was stolen from my house. I had like a party house like this in Boston. But the deck was broken and he had the trucks on it. So he gave me, he was like, oh, your setup sucks. And he, I was like, oh, let me buy one from you. And he's like, and he just gave me his broken deck with the wheels and trucks on it. and we had it set up in the, with a cruiser board for a while. And it was like, that's Jamie Thomas's trucks and wheels and whatever, you know what I mean? And then someone stole it because of what it was. And, but you know, but again, like, so everything I'm doing now is like in skateboarding, you wanted a place to skate, a ramp or a box. So you built it.
Right.
You know what I mean, go in the woods. So everything I built furniture and all this shit now, like 100% of learning how to use tools was from skateboarding, jigsaw and power, all that shit was 100% from skateboarding. And then like, you know, then that led to punk. And then like the combination of punk and skateboarding with skateboarding, you're like looking down simultaneously at the ground in front of you for a crack, but then also a couple blocks ahead of you for whatever else it might be, a cop or a cool thing or whatever it is, you know? So like, that's a very rare and very simple, but when I say it, but like so crazy and different. It's like literally you're looking one eye as far as down the street as you can and one eye directly down right in front of you at the same time, where most people don't have, they're kind of doing one or the other, I feel. And skateboarding gave me that. And then the idea of building the stuff, and then you go to the punk shows and it's like so tied into it. And then at the punk shows, you're like, just like skateboarding, it's like you can have like people are selling like vegan, you know, food outside or zines or a little record stand and t-shirts, and inside they have little booths and stuff like that. And, you know, the stage is 2 feet and the PA is like whatever. It's a VFW hall. It's not like a barrier and security guards and stuff.
Everything's DIY.
Yeah. And then, but then I saw like, oh, I could do this stuff. So after going to like 3 or 4 shows, my friend was like, we should do shows. And I was like, fuck yeah, of course we should do shows. Easy. You know what I mean? And
how old were you?
I was 15.
Oh shit. So you're young.
Shows. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe 14, but 15, I think, when I was doing the shows. I didn't have a license. Or I don't have a license now because I'm a terrible driver. But then I wasn't old enough to get a license. And I booked like.
And was it like people your age or people similar to you doing the shows currently, or was it like bigger people doing it?
No, all young stuff. I did the suburbs, so I wasn't in Boston or Worcester. I wasn't in the big cities. I was like in like the little crap.
So it's like underground, kind of like
like local VFW fucking, halls and little teeny like rental spots. We'd spend $500 on renting a thing.
Not for the night.
Make flyers. There was no internet or anything at that time, so you'd like make flyers and go to other shows and pass them out. Book all the bands. You know, yeah. And then I did hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows that I booked. And then I'm doing a cannabis festival with music coming up, you know, called Green Street, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But when I was in high school and the phone dialer and all that stuff, I booked a thing called New Bedford Fest with my friend Kendra, and 3,000 kids showed up. And this is before the internet.
Yeah.
This is like before cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and people flew in from Europe. I have a friend that posted today a story of the flyer of the festival from today that she posted. And she quit high. She left. She told her parents she was going to her friend's house. She was 15. This is Virginia Beach. She went to the airport, bought a ticket, flew. A 15-year-old flew somehow to New Bedford Fest. I know where she's. 30 years ago, she's like my best friend today. Her name's Jess Humphrey, and she's an incredible photographer, incredible artist. But you know, she like lied to her parents, snuck away, went to these things, and that's what. That's what it was. Like, it, you know, it was people from all over the country.
So, like, when did your shit start get cracking? Like, you're 15, you throw a show. Okay, cool. And then, like, when are thousands of people starting to show up? Like, how's that? You know what I mean? Like,
why?
Like, did you just have the dopest bands? Like, did you, like, what? Like,
yeah, we had the dopest bands. It was like, let's bring, like, Strife and Earth Crisis and, you know, like, these kind of, like, the biggest straight edge hardcore bands of the time. Endpoint, Converge, like, all these bands. Let's bring them all out and have them play the show. And it was, like, $12 to get in or whatever. And, the bands made like $50, $200, you know what I mean? And But yeah, it's community. I mean, everything I do, skateboarding community, right? Punk rock community, cannabis community, everything I do. Hip hop, I love. I'm not involved with it really now a little bit, but it's all community based stuff. That's all.
Right.
That's
it's all I culture. It's all community.
100%. That's all I care about.
And at what point was it throwing these shows? You're getting thousands of people there to where you kind of started a label and you had that relationship with the bands.
Yeah. So one of the bands called Cast Iron Hike was amazing. They didn't. No one put out their record. We were surprised. But we'd book them to open up like for all the touring bands, and they'd bring like the 100 locals or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Dickie Cummings, who I was doing the shows with, real name Dickie Cummings, and yeah, it's insane. Dickie, I love you.
I want to meet his parents, dude.
Yeah, for real.
Thanks, mom.
I worked with his dad actually. I was an engineer, so I could have had like a different career. So I went to high school for engineering, mechanical engineering, and in high school I went to a vocational school and I went and worked, and I worked with Dickie's dad at like a huge engineering firm working for NASA. And built like we built machines that tested microchips for NASA. So it was like extreme heat and colds. So they put them, they'd put like a microchip in this thing that we would make, and it would like make it crazy temperature simulations. So to know if this microchip would work when it was up in space or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when the machines worked, then they were one-off machines. The engineers would be like, okay, this machine's good. Take it apart and photograph it, and I would take Polaroids of it and measure every little piece of it out and draw AutoCAD 3D versions of these machines. So like crazy. They could be like made by NASA, or whatever. Super crazy.
Yeah.
And
so you're a rocket scientist, basically.
And I hated it. And I had a full scholarship. I graduated when I was 17 in high school, and I had a full scholarship to Northeastern for mechanical engineering. And I had the label just started, you know, with this one band. The record hadn't even come out yet. We signed this band that called Cast Iron Hike. Used the money from the shows to put it out. And after like a couple, maybe a month or two of college courses of calculus at like 8 a.m., these people, yikes. And I'm skateboarding to class, and it's like, I'm looking around and I'm like, this is not my people. The first cassette and CD came out, and called The Salmon Drive. And like the day that came out and I was like pushing them back on my skateboard to my dorm room, I was like, I'm not going to class tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. I'm going to go to every record store with these things, and I'm going to go try to put them on consignment and turn it into a label.
Right.
So that was 1994. And then and the record came out in 95, I guess, October 95. And then I did it for 12 years.
How did that first record drop? Like, how was the first one?
It was good. They ended up signing to a label called Trustkill, and then ended up signing to Victory Records after that. So 90% of the bands I worked with went on to become these like big bands and signed to other big labels.
You were like the startup.
Every time. Yeah. You know, for I put 75 records out, 60 of them went on to do something. Like Raise It, Jimmy World, Jimmy The Drive World. And Hives. I did all their first records. And but the exact same feeling I got from Singer of Jimmy World or Singer of Say Anything or All American Rejects or whatever, the exact same feeling I got from them is the feeling I got from the Weed Men and Women. And that's why I went into cannabis full time, because I was in music. There's indie labels and major labels. There's South by Southwest already existing, CMJ, Coachella, Rolling Stone, you know, Pitchfork. There's all these like platforms that exist. In cannabis, there's none of that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not an indie label, a major label yet. Now there's MSOs. This is 10 years ago, but still, I think it's anyone's game still. So, you know, for me, it was like, I didn't think that I could take the indie label and become Epitaph or become Geffen. I didn't think I could do that.
Right.
And then when I met all the cannabis operators, I knew that I could do that. So my goal with Green Street is to become like the universal of cannabis, meaning like studios with the festivals and the events and the buildings and the media and the marketing.
Have you seen the Disney blueprint?
Of course.
That's one of my favorite things.
Unbelievable. Yeah, so to me, the most, if you guys haven't seen, Lou Wasserman created Universal as we know it, started as CBS, turned into, or I'm sorry, MCA, and then MCA Records, CBS Records, one of those two, I forgot, and then turned it into Universal as we know it today. Most influential and important person ever to be in Hollywood, period. The documentary is called The Last Mogul. It's unbelievable. I almost probably didn't tell you guys before because I don't want you to know like my secrets. But if you watch The Last Mogul, you're gonna be like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So when you watch it, it's like, there, I want to create the major labels. Mm-hmm. I want to make the Rolling Stone. I want to make the South by Southwest and the CMJ and the Coachella of the space, you know?
Right.
And I want other people to do it as well. I didn't think I'd have to do it. I thought I'd just be the brand guy. you know, just like running the record label. And that's how I look at it now. Like right now we have 10 businesses under Green Street, all cannabis related.
10 brands,
10 companies,
or 10 like entities.
Yeah, the building, the festival, Hall Flowers, the NFT project we're doing, we have 5 brands in market. But I just look at it like I'm running a record label with 5 or 10 artists. I look at it the exact same way. Right. People are like, how are you doing all this? You're doing too much. And it's like, I had 12 bands on a roster for a decade. And
when you made that pivot, it's like now you have that 12 years of experience of fucking selling records and marketing.
It's exactly
the same events
thing.
And merch. And like,
I'm running a label. That's exactly that.
Same
you
shit
know,
with
you can't
like,
download
so
weed, though.
Funny.
Yeah, that's
you know,
like,
that's it.
It's
you know?
So funny. Like, that's very similar to us. Like, we were doing the merch and the clothing and the streetwear for fucking 6-7 years. And then it was like, all right, let's do this. And then it's like, just apply all that we learned from that to this, you know? It's
exactly, because the thing is there's nothing you can apply because this hasn't been done yet.
Right.
So like, people are applying whatever they know. Some people are applying fashion, some people are doing the music, some people doing the Red Bull energy drink, some people doing the alcohol, the big tobacco, but no one actually knows what they're doing in cannabis, you know? Like,
no,
you know?
We're all trying to
like,
pave
we
the
know
way.
The most and we still don't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
We're all trying to take our inspiration and like bring it to the space and see what the fuck we can build because...
Yeah.
I mean, there is some pioneers and legacy people, but you know,
but they
got
know
us.
Where it's
yeah,
going.
They got us here, and it's going to take like the new wave to push it forward.
Yeah, and hopefully they don't get lost along the way. You know, my you know vision for I don't say it's like our motto or our goal or whatever, but like our underlying like you know, does this ladder back up to what we're here to do? And that statement now is to protect the authenticity of cannabis.
Facts, us too. Same here.
Like that's it. So, and this was done with like a. Over COVID, a friend of mine and I worked on for months. Zach, I love you so much. And he was the guy from PAPS I introduced you to.
Okay,
Zach, not Matt, but Zach. And I've known Zach. Zach was in my office. We had the record labels together. He worked with me 25 years ago. So he came to me and was like, Rama, like, you should be more rich. What are you doing? What I don't understand. Like, what's going on? You know, and I'm fine, everybody. But, you know what I mean? But I'd like to buy the house that we're hanging out in right now. You know, not rent, not sleeping in my friend's house. No. You know, but he was like, you should, you know, let me help you tighten this up and connect all of the dots. Because, like, just like the Disney thing you mentioned, I have all these things, but they're not really connected.
It's like, how do you really,
how do you bundle this together, right?
Exactly.
So, we started going through this exercise and it was like months of work. And at the end, it kind of like by answering all these questions and all these things, it was like my goal was defined for me. It was kind of like, okay, well, if that's how you think, then your goal is to protect the authenticity of cannabis. And that's what I'm doing in every move. That's what the building's there to do. That's what Hall of Flowers does. That's why I like you guys. That's why I don't work with some big companies that would pay me ridiculous money because I just, not that they don't deserve to win, but I'm not going to help them win forever, you know? And so to me, like, as long as everything ladders up to that, you know, then we're going to be good. And with, you know, music, again, we're super limited. Again, all these platforms exist, so it's amazing because you can launch an artist, but, you know, then you're really stuck in these platforms. And you have to hope you get on Coachella this year and hope you get on South by Southwest this year and hope Pitchfork doesn't destroy it.
Right.
And please, Rolling Stone, give me a review. And, you know, with cannabis, it was like, who's going to make all these platforms? And I thought other people would
do it.
It's
still just such a blank slate.
And no one's done
it's
it.
Like,
you know?
Yeah,
and again, I love Dougie. I think someone has a Hitman thing. Chalice was amazing. And I love Dr. K when he's doing over there, you know,
Kushtok.
With Kushtok. Yeah, that was obviously. And Hall Flowers is killing it. And aren't there other? And then there's.
And we're only talking about California. You know what I mean?
Secret Session's amazing.
Secret
sure.
Session, Emerald Cup.
Oh, Emerald Cup. Amazing,
Boston Freedom Rally?
I went to that so much.
I haven't been there, but
That's also an interesting thing. So I didn't smoke weed till I was 25.
Oh, shit. Because
all my bands were straight edge bands. So I was never put X in my hand ever.
Yeah.
But I did like 10 yard fight and fast break and floor punch and you know, Converge and, you know, all these bands that like were like fucking straight edge. I was Earth Crisis's booking agent. I booked all their tours.
Yeah.
Like very straight edge, you know? So we just didn't do anything, you know? And then I think the Get Up Kids literally came through and I was booking them and they were like, let's do shots. And I was like, what? No, we're straight edge.
You don't want none of that, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, the next day I was like, this is amazing. Can I go on tour with you? And and then I was like drinking a little bit. And then my friend Liz Tempesta, one of my BFFs ever, so amazing. She, when I was 25, she's like, Rami, you gotta smoke weed. I'm telling you. Like, and I'm smoking indica weed all day, and I have all this energy. You know?
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't drink coffee or anything. Like, this is just like what you get.
Yeah.
She was like, Rami, you gotta fucking relax. Like, please try this. And for years, she was begging me to smoke weed. I wouldn't do it. And then we're at her house one time, and she's like, please do this. And I was like, okay, we'll try it. And then like 20 minutes, and I was like, this is incredible. What the fuck I've been doing?
What have I been doing?
Yeah. Like, but I'm kind of glad I didn't do it when I was young, because I have I was able to evolve everything enough, and you know, mature, my brain developed, blah blah blah. Right. So like, you know, I don't know if I would have had the same relationship if I did it when I was younger.
Same you know, here. Yeah. I was like 21, 22 before I was like going to buy weed. Before I smoked a couple times, but it wasn't. It was just like around or whatever.
Yeah, same thing. Like when we were super young, it was like, you know, we shared a joint with like 25 kids in the woods with like warm beer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You
know what I mean? Yeah, I consider it like when I started buying sacks. Yeah. Then like, all right, I'm a fucking stoner. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not relying on it, like a homie getting me high. Like I'm going to pick
up. That's right.
That's when I started smoking really.
Yeah, it's wild.
So yeah, so talking about all these festivals and stuff, that's like the dream. Green Street Festival, that's what we're doing, right?
Like, so how did Green Street, okay, we need to talk about like, you started Green Street, right?
You and Josh, or
like, yeah, so like, we were doing Beats by Dre, Disney, DreamWorks.
So that was my question. Interscope. When you started Green Street, was the intention, we're going to be a solely cannabis-focused agency, or was it like, we're just going to be an agency and whatever the fuck happens?
No, hell no. No, it was like, it was DreamWorks, Disney, with my mentor, Dr. Romanelli, we were doing Street Virus and the Pancake Epidemic. And it was Disney, DreamWorks, Interscope, Beats by Dre, Katy Perry, like the biggest things in the world, honestly. Like, dude, the craziest people of all time would come to the office. Darren is like...
Wait, but whose office? That's your mentor's office.
Yeah, Darren Romanelli.
Got it.
Dr. Romanelli.
Okay, that was I've heard you mention that name a lot.
Yeah, that was Darren, the IHOP Darren, spot? Or?
Yeah, above
that's
IHOP.
That's where we met you.
Yeah. Darren was like... Darren's dad is named Dan Romanelli, and Dan Romanelli is the king of licensing, period. He made
burger fries or some shit, right? What is it? Waffle fries?
No, that's
Chris chicken
Porter.
Fries.
Chicken fries.
That's Chicken Porter Bogowski.
Okay.
That's Crispin Porter Bogowski. Chicken Porter. Yeah. That's Crispin Porter. Yeah, the weed's good. That's Crispin Porter Bogowski. No, that's an agency. Dan Romanelli is old school. He made Space Jam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Space Jam was supposed to be like a commercial, and that they turned into like a 2-hour-long movie. Mm-hmm. You know, he made Harry Potter. He did the biggest licensing deal. He did Batman.
Right.
Okay. He was the founder of Warner Brothers Consumer Products. So ever. He made it up.
That shit is so gnarly, it's like hard to wrap your head around.
It's like,
you know what I mean?
It's like billions of dollars, I think. Yeah. Hundreds of millions of dollars. He made Bugs Bunny Animal Crackers, I think, was the first project.
Yeah.
And it was like taking Looney Tunes, licensing it to a cookie company, but no one had done licensing like this before. This didn't exist before.
You know,
a little bit, celebrities did stuff, but it wasn't like this. And then he did Space Jam, he did all this stuff, then he went and started his own company. And his son, Dan Romanelli's son, Darren, is my age. And I met him through the fashion shows. He does a brand called Dr. Romanelli that's in Maxfield and in the top shops in the world. He collaborates with the world's biggest artists and designers and jewelry makers. I'm talking about shit that we've never heard of because we could never afford it. You know, crazy shit. Six-figure watches and shit.
Yeah.
And he's the number one probably creative mind I have ever met, kind of thing. And he was a mentor of mine. And I didn't know what to do. I had the label. At the end, one of the bands fired me. I went from label to just managing the bands because it was way more money I made, and I didn't spend my money on it. And I worked with 3 or 4 artists instead of dozens. So I started managing the artists for a couple years. And then they all fired me, basically. And then I didn't know what to do. So I started working with my friend John LaCroix, who was in 10 Yard Fight with me. He was the art director of 411 Video Magazine.
Oh, damn, you made like the Chaos logo and shit. Yeah.
So I don't, so much stuff he did. I used to go to 411 and see these guys all the time with Cole Matthews. You might know Cole.
Yeah, I know Cole.
Yeah,
I grew up watching 411 and there's a shout out. Yeah, there's the shout out. It's like, yo, this is Jimmy World watching 411. This is Rama.
Yeah, that was at my house. Yeah, so that was all through John LaCroix. We did an agency for a couple years. I did an art gallery and agency with him. It was very cool. It was in San Francisco. It was terrible weather. And I told Darren that I had this little agency going, and Darren said, oh, you should, if you want to, come and join me. And John knew that was a really big opportunity, and Darren was just kind of doing these one-off projects. And I went on and joined forces there, and then I brought in a couple big clients, Interscope and these things, and we signed GPen there, just GPen, right?
And that logo. There you go. Right behind it. Yeah.
And like, and you know, and I worked with them. I talked to Chris today, actually. And you know, we made everything for them. We made their packaging. They still run today. We made their style guide. We made their social media strategy. You know, this is a decade ago, you know. We did a lot of the licensing deals. They already had Action Bronson. They were already cracking. They were killing it, you know. But, you know, we, you know, brought it to like the mainstream with them, you know. Right. We did the game deal, and you know, we did Snoop with them and Wiz Khalifa with them, and all the Agenda shows and all the collaborations there, the DGKs. And
do you like the Huff like golf one at Agenda? I remember that one was sick.
Yeah, so I built that golf course.
Really? The mini golf, and the Vegas one or whatever.
Yeah, the mini golf. Yeah, that was all sick. Me. The mini golf was crazy. My thing. Yeah, for sure, that was awesome. And yeah, the Young Jeezy. I have a signed putter from Young Jeezy. We had a hole for him. Sick. And one of my faves. And I just treated Chris and G-Pen the way that we treated Beats by Dre. It was like just real marketing and plans and strategies and, like, you know, it was real, you know, licensing deals. And that took off so fast that their attorney, Josh Shelton, came back to me and said, I don't know what you're doing here with this branding and marketing stuff, but my law firm and your ad agency should smash together to create a new compliant ad agency just dedicated to weed.
So he was doing all the G-Pen legal stuff.
Yeah. He introduced the founders of the two company of G-Pen, you know, but everything we had to do was had to be compliant, as you guys know. So with Beats and, you know, we were designing LeBron James headphones, like, for him to wear at the game on the side of the thing.
Right.
Like super art projects. It just need to get approved legal. You know what I mean? But just like, it looks cool. Good. You know what I mean? Everything we did for this was like, it has to be approved. So everything we did went through Josh. And after like 6 months or whatever, like every day talking to him, he was like, we should start this thing called Green Street. It was his idea. I said no for probably the first 6 months. And then I started meeting more of the cannabis people. And I got this feeling of this is Jimmy World. This is at the drive-in. This is, you know, South by Southwest, whatever. Right. He's like, this is good. Wow. If I can just survive long enough and we can make $2 an hour for 5 years kind of thing, trust will be priceless. Mm-hmm. The same way it was in the music scene. Mm-hmm. You know, I had Jimmy World and the Hives and at the drive-in, they could have went to any label they wanted,
right?
But they fucked with me because I was just down and I was into it. And I loved the music and I was, you know, they trusted me. So I knew that's what it was going to be, you know? So that was the idea. 100% dedicated to weed from the very, very beginning. And I stayed at Street Fires for maybe about a year or so. And then that's when I met Gary, actually Vaynerchuk back then. And then.
You met Gary before you started Green Street?
Yeah. Yeah. I met Gary when I first joined, Darren. Hmm. Yeah. I had a,
is that how you met Gary, is through Darren?
No, I had a client. It's the only person I met on my own actually ever.
Crazy.
Everything else was from Darren. but no, I had a client, Maurice Canbar, and Maurice, started Sky Vodka. And, he's like 80-year-old dude. He's super sick. He invented the LED traffic light, the thing you put on a syringe at the doctor's office after you use it. The defaucet comb was his first
just
patent.
All those Jesus things Christ. That are like
super sick. The craziest dude of all time. And I met him. He has the craziest house in San Francisco. I'm talking about, he has like this house, but in San Francisco.
Which is, yeah.
That's, and no one has this house except for him.
Yeah.
And he was like 80 drinking martinis with like a 30-year-old girl in the back of his Vespa.
Perfect.
Well, he actually bought he liked scooters, so he bought a scooter company. You know, because he wanted like scooters, and he gave me a scooter. It was awesome. But he was like, you should meet this guy, Gary Vaynerchuk. He wears t-shirts like you. He swears like you. I think you'd like him. And they paid for a ticket to me to go to like a wine symposium up in Napa at the CIA Culinary Institute. And Gary was doing a book signing. He did a lecture with like maybe 100 or 200 people, and then a book signing at the end, but only like 10 people cared about getting a book from him.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy's sick. Oh my God.
And what year was this? Like, he probably wasn't
2011.
Okay. Oh, so people weren't really, he wasn't really like that big.
No, he had this is Thank You Economy just came out. So I think that was his second book. And I think was best selling book at that time, but like Twitter was just out and that was it.
Right.
And I was like next in line, and the guy left, and he goes to me and he's like, dude, what the fuck? What are you doing here? Like, did you sneak in?
Yeah.
And I was the only person not with a suit on, you know? And I was like, well, no, like my client, you know, whatever. They said they like you because you swear and I swear. And he's like, okay. And I had this great conversation with him, and he signed two books, one to me, Rama, I love you, Gary. And then my partner at the time, not Darren, but his business partner, Nate, didn't like how Gary was talking about, like, you should just do your own social. And, you know, like Nate wanted to like do the client services, and Gary was like the disruptor of client services at the time.
Right.
So he wrote, hey Nate, fuck off. You know, love Gary, and hey Rama, love you, love Gary. You know? And Nate still had the book, and maybe still does right now. But that happened a decade ago. That's, you know, crazy. And then the partners, Nate and Darren, we were doing the Green Street for 4 years. We were doing good, not crushing it, not making tons of money. But again, I don't care at this point, right? Because even now I don't care about the money. It's like, and you guys too, like, we need money to pay rent and stuff and buy cool stuff. But like, it's not that we'd be doctors if it was just the money thing, right? So now it's like the culture thing. What can we build? So, but they were doing Beats by Dre, Disney, DreamWorks, you know, all this stuff. And those clients are paying $100,000 a month retainer. Mm-hmm. And our clients, as you know, are paying much less than that,
right?
You know, and this is still 4 years ago. So they came to me, Nate and Darren, one day, and I had reconnected with Gary about a month or two before that. And they came to us and said, they're like, we quit. We have, like, Nate and Darren, they were like, we give up. We have to forfeit. I call it the monopoly. Like, you know, when your friend's like, I'm going to bed, just take my shit and divide it up or whatever.
Yeah.
That's basically what they did. And they're like, Rama, good luck. Have fun. Do your little agency thing. You know, because all my clients combined didn't even touch theirs, but it was the same staff doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
So the same guy that's designing Beats by Dre shit is designing, you know, whatever IC Collective stuff or whatever. And the money's not the same budget. That's, you know what I mean? Right. So, and they quit. No buyout. Just forfeit of their shares. It would be like if you were like, one of you guys was like, I'm out, you guys just take it.
Yeah.
And you're like, what, like, you want to split stuff, you want to take the ring light? And you're like, nah, fuck it, take all that. You're like, are you sure? And you're like, yeah, I just want to go to bed. So they did that before they were out of the elevator, out of our building. Before I had Gary on the phone. I was like, dude, you know those guys you just met, and you know how you want to be involved in the company.
And so it was, sorry, it was you, Josh, and those two guys were all the equity owners.
Yeah, it was so like we 25% each.
Got
it.
Is this Desmond yet, or is this still
IHOP spot? This is Desmond,
Okay, so this isn't the Desmond.
This is Desmond. This is like, so that they were on the penthouse. They got in the elevator before they were out, before Ruben let them out of the Desmond elevator. Ruben, I want to get into the new building, but just to press the buttons.
For real.
You know, and let's split them maybe. And we'll get him on OnlyFans.
For real. We'll think of something. We'll get him sponsored.
He's the goddamn.
Tomorrow, what are we talking about?
You got a pension.
So, real. Somebody will do it.
Are you 1,000%?
For sure. Yeah, it's a good idea.
But he's been in that same elevator for like 50 years.
50 years.
We can get him
straight up. Yeah. Well, they closed it.
Oh, okay. Perfect. This is where he retires in your elevator.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. We'll just put him in. Okay. So, they quit. I just reconnected with Gary V a month or two before that. I hit Gary up and he was like, I was like, they're out. Do you want to buy half their company? So these guys gave it back to me on one day. And then that minute later, I sold it to Gary for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Like retirement.
I'm a broker now.
Yeah.
And crazy. And and then he was like,
Did Gary just say yes instantly?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you give him a number? You just threw a number at him. He said yes. Or did you like negotiate, or how did that work?
Yeah, we negotiated for a while. Okay. For sure. And I don't think I deal with that stuff. That's like Josh and his team or whatever. Right, you know what I mean? I'm just like.
But he was just like, yes, I'm down. And then you figured it out.
He actually was like, I'd love to be involved, Rama, but there's another agency involved. How can I even, what do you need from me?
You know what you do? You send him a photo of the I love you, Rama from 2011.
I did. I showed them.
And you're like, this is why you go with me.
They didn't believe me. You know what I mean? And then the funny thing is, I don't know this. This is secondhand. But Darren and Nate told apparently the staff, that was my staff up until they quit and they took them away, that within three months, Green Street's gone. They're like, there's no way they're going to be able to do this without us. Like, Rama, there's no way Rama can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and then you just instantly signed the fucking biggest deal.
And then Nate and Darren didn't want me to do IP. They want me to do brands. They didn't want me to do. I had the idea for Hall of Flowers for years before we did it. Years and years and years and years. I've been trying to get Aaron Levant to do Hall of Flowers, and Darren Nate wouldn't let me do it. Gary, first thing he said is, "What's up with the IP? We got to own weight. What are we doing?" You know what I mean? Like, because again, we know this. Like, agencies. Like, you know, agencies. This is what agencies. This is either puts agencies out of business, or makes them all their money, period. You know, chicken fries.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? $300 million is what they made off chicken fries. So, I mean, they wouldn't get paid that much to come up with the idea, but they own part of it and, you know, whatever. So, like, but it's a maker or breaker because you take focus off of what you should be doing, which is the client services, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Darren and Nate didn't want to do that. Gary has all the money in the world. Doesn't matter to him. So he, like, gave us the luxury to not have to just chase clients, but to start building these brands up. And the Hall of Flowers, he supported us with that idea. And the festival, of course, he's like, you know, the headliner of the festival besides Juicy J.
The cosign is huge.
Huge.
So crazy.
Yeah. And strategy. He texts me all the time. He was on the Nelk Boys, you know, thing for NFTs. I texted him like, you know, loving the interview, blah, blah. And he responds like, what's your favorite part? And I'm like, it's like a fucking I'm heterosexual, so it's like a hot girl.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, right. I'm like, delete. No. What am I saying? What's my answer? Okay. If I'm Gary, what does he want to hear from me? Why did I like it? You know what I mean? I'm like, oh my God. Cause like, I still can't even believe this dude like cares. Or
yeah. That's why he's so fucking smart. Cause he's just like, he respects your opinion. And he's like, what do you think of it? Like what, blah, blah, blah. And then he just takes all that data.
That I'm like the weed, you know, guy right now. Like he calls me the Vince McMahon of weed.
Well, we're going to start calling you that too.
I mean,
too.
You do have the belt.
There you go. I grew up watching WWF and going to wrestling every month or whatever. So I get it. I'm cool with Vince McMahon, but I don't want to be like shirt off in the ring, Vince McMahon, you know, wrestling with everybody else.
Yeah.
I'd more be like behind the scenes guy, you know?
Yeah. So, okay. So Hall Flowers.
Yeah.
So you had the idea for years, and then what? So you got the investment. That obviously gives you some room to breathe and kind of work on projects, other shit, build up IP.
Yeah.
So that was the first big project, was like, all right, let's get the event kind of thing going.
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. I was begging Aaron. So I did when I sold the record label, actually, I left one thing out. For 2 years, I did a fashion trade show in New York and Vegas called United. And I did it with a guy named Ryan Walker, who does cannabis now. And, Steve Aoki, like the DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with Steve. We did music together, punk stuff together. Amazing, amazing guy. And I launched the Dimmock collection for him, the clothing thing that he's still doing now. And Aaron Levant asked me from Agenda Trade Show, this is against ASR 2011-ish or something maybe, you know? Oh, no, wait.
Like Agenda.
No, or 2007. Yeah. It was like ASR was in San Diego. He was having Agenda across the hallway from it. Yep. Like in like a parking lot, basically.
Mm-hmm. Take like a free limo to the hotel or exactly whatever.
Right. Yep. And porta potties. And I had the punk label still. But it was just at the very, very, very end. Excuse me. And I met Aaron. He asked me to handle the DJs for the show. So I had Steve come in with some other people and they DJed Agenda. And as part of the payout, he gave me like a trade show booth. And I brought the band's punk merchandise to it. And I had a screen print shop, just like you guys are doing, for the tour merch. And I brought the band. The band was like a punk label called, at this point, called Tarantulas. Bands like The Bronx, The Distillers, Darker My Love, The Explosion. So like kind of like art school clash style punk rock bands. And the merch was sick. Like we had denim jackets and cool sweaters and embroidery and all the shit. And I just had it at the trade show, and I didn't know what to do. I thought they were going to be like $12 for a shirt and $20 for a jacket. I didn't know what's going on, what a trade show is.
Yeah.
And a Japanese guy came up, and he pointed at a shirt, and he said, $300. And I said, no, they're $16. And he said, $300. And I was like, no. And he wrote it down, and I'm like, you want 300 of these shirts? And he's like, can you do that? And I was like, what?
Yes. You didn't even understand like, the concept of wholesale or whatever.
I didn't know what's going on. Yeah. So he then goes, 300, 300, 300, all the shirts. Might change my life. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. And then at this point, I don't know what's going on now with cannabis, with the fashion industry, but the Japanese, they would pay you cash and they'd give you half up front.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes half and he pulls out his little zip thing and, and gives me like 30 grand or something. And my fucking brain exploded. It changed my whole entire life. And I was like, okay, right. This is, you can't download music. This is just starting. This is it now, you know? And before the end of Agenda, I met my neighbor, who's Kevin Kusatsu, who, if you guys know Kevin, crazy Diplo's manager now and like super boss. He ran Vagrant Records. And I met like Elwood Clothing was there. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, that's why I know Vern Laird and like all these stuff. I know.
Oh, it was in the Arts District or Vern, where is this at?
This was, I don't know. This was like at a parking lot somewhere.
Oh, really?
Real quick, Vern, you know Vern, obviously. Yeah, yeah. Vern played my punk fest in high school.
Really?
Point of view.
Dude, that's so funny. I gotta hit him up.
So Vern, amazing. I still talk to him. Community, right? So, I'm at Agenda, blow my mind, Steve's DJing. I instantly go to every trade show that exists and I say, let me do your DJing and give me some fucking trade show booths.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do all this stuff, right? So I launched a clothing line for Steve. Steve was DJing at a Magic trade show or Pool trade show, if you know Pool. And the marketing director of Pool came to me and said, Pool sucks. We should do our own trade show. And at that show, we walked around to talk to all the brands and we created a show on the spot out of nowhere. And we went around and sold it to all these other brands. And we said, in 6 months, you're not coming back to this show. We're doing it across the street.
Yeah.
It's going to be better. And we did United. And it was every single show we ever sold out. It's where Crew launched and Super launched. It's where Skull Candy launched. It's where Neff launched. Huge things, you know. And these guys had little 6-foot booths in our little show.
Mm-hmm.
Again, same feeling I got from that stuff. And so the second, and then Agenda was way bigger. We had our little crappy show, United. Agenda's crazy, much bigger. And when I'm with GPen, it was like, we need Agenda for weed. You know, we need to like do this wholesale thing. We need United for weed, not really, but Agenda for weed. Aaron Levant, I went to him every 6 months for while I'm at Agenda and said, please, let's do Agenda for weed. No. And then one day I see him and he goes, dude, I want to get into the weed business. What should I do? And I said, what are you talking about? Do a fucking trade show. He's like, I don't want to do a trade show. This is when he sold to Reed Exhibitions and he's like retiring. And I'm like, dude, you have to do a trade show. What are you talking
about? You're the fucking master, bro. You're the master. Yeah.
I promise everyone will trust this. Yeah. I'll do the weed stuff. I looked at like the Barracks, what they did with the Barracks. Mm-hmm. I was like, we could do this. That's the idea. I bring the weed. You make the show happen, you know? And then he was like, after a while, after a couple of years, he was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. This guy, Danny, has to run it. Danny's running Liberty, which is an incredible show, even bigger than Agenda or as big or more fancy at least. And he was running Capsule, and before that he did Liberty, a crazy show. So
those are the more like high-end kind of fashion.
High-end stuff, the fancy show. So, and they partnered together for a Vegas show called Modern Assembly. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm already working with Danny, so I'll do it, but Danny needs to run it. You guys bring the weed. And and that's how we started it, basically, yeah. Yeah, and those guys funded it. We have like some pretty famous investors actually on the show, and I probably shouldn't say them, but like I'll say like, number one rock band of a generation is an investor. Mm-hmm. Like number one clothing brand of a generation is an investor. Number one like venue owner in number one venue. Yeah. When you're thinking about number ones, like think steps higher than you're thinking.
Yeah.
Like the craziest people.
Well, you guys have curated it well, you know? Yeah. Gary headlining it. Gary's the goddamn rock star.
Yeah. Well, that was, of course. That's like what I brought to the table.
Yeah, you got Gary and then you guys, the Bobby Hundreds and Burner and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Aaron Coffey.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. The likes all the big dogs. Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, yeah, exactly. So, and that, I did all that stuff, all the programming and the stuff to, because I want to add value to the cannabis industry.
Yeah.
Well, why Hall of Flowers works is because Danny does the show. He runs it. He would say it's my dream and he made it happen. And I completely agree with that. You know, like I could have never done what he did for sure. You know, he did an unbelievable job. You know, I brought like the perspective of what does the cannabis brand need? What are we looking for? What's missing? You know, how do we sell as many of these as we possibly can? Mm. You know what I mean? So that's why we built it from that way. Where a lot of the shows, you know, not Danny's shows, but the cannabis shows are built from like people not even going to shows or not even caring about that as much. Being like, how much can we make?
How do we make money off every single inch of this place?
How do we make money? Vendors, you know, and whatever. And that's all it is. It's not like how do we give the best experience?
Right.
Give value. How much can we make? You know what I mean? And why Hall of Flowers works is because it's built from the exhibitor perspective. You know, why the building is working now is because I needed an office the same way you guys needed an office. Mm-hmm. That's why the Green Street building is happening. It's because we just needed a place to work. And it was like, just like weed, you buy a bunch and you sell some to your friends to make your money back. That was the idea, you know? So we were renting the building for Green Street for years. Finally, we just bought this building and now we're moving in now.
So what's the timeline on that? Okay, so Hall of Flowers, you launched that, right?
Yep, 4 years.
The idea of the building was right before Hall of Flowers launched, right around the same time.
No. Wow, fuck.
So right when you launched, it was the same time.
4 years.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We bought the building 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Craziest.
And project. That was right when Gary was about to
just coming on,
coming through, or whatever.
Yep. Right at the exact same time.
Got it. Yeah. And then building. Goddamn, Rama, fucking all these events, all these brands. Now we got a building. All right. Building. So what was the concept with that? Obviously, like probably same thing, right? Like why you build it, they will come. It hasn't been done yet. Like there's a need for this. There's a void. Like you guys timed it perfectly with Hall Flowers. Like nobody's doing it. You came and did it perfectly. Yeah. Like same thing here. There's, in my opinion, a lot of opinion, like there's a huge opportunity for this like community WeWorking kind of like cannabis business. I don't know. There's so many things. I don't even want to put a label on it because it's so many things.
It's like the Hall of Flowers 365. Mm-hmm. It's like Hall of Flowers are those couple days a year. Where is the community working in the rest of the time?
Right.
So like the goal is to have like the top, Hall Flowers has 500 brands at it. The building will have 50. Mm-hmm. So the top 10% of the people that are at the trade show will come here. And the dream is that they like bring their trade show booth and set it up right in the building, or they have their offices, you know, sales offices, or their events are happening there. But yeah, the building was, I mean, straight up like we needed an office. Oh, well, and I'll actually rewind. When I did the record label, in Boston, I started a thing called Initech. and I have a news article, a newspaper article of it, front page of the paper. And I got an office. I brought two other record labels in, Bridge Nine Records, who kills it, and Hydrahead Records. I had two booking agents come in, Matt Galley, who's the biggest booking agent basically in the world, and this guy, Matt Pike. I had Jen Malone in there, who's PR, who now does all the music for Euphoria and John Wick and Atlanta. I had a recording studio in there. I had a mastering studio. I had, so all for music. And I called it Inatech. And it was the same idea. It was like, let's get all the record labels and all the stuff together. And everyone wrote about it and everyone went there. And it was like the hub. That was 20 years ago, you know? And now I'm just doing it again for weed. But it's the same exact thing. I just want to have like I want to do hood rat shit with my friends. Whatever, you
know? That's right.
Like, you know, like the original meme. But, you know, that was the idea. And this one started with me needing an office. I was probably literally like smoking a joint at my desk in a meeting. And someone was like, you can smoke here in your office? And I was like, yeah, that's what, yeah, you can't smoke weed at your office. And they were like, no, can we move in here? And I was like, sure. So we had my partner, Josh, attorney, you know, he got us first right of refusal of everything else that came up in the building. So anything someone would come up, we would take it and just flip it to someone else.
Yeah.
And,
okay, so you're kind of already low. You had kind of like low key. We're already kind of doing that at the Desmond, I guess. Then, right?
Yeah.
You're at least subleasing out certain floors.
Everyone in there, we were.
Got it.
There was all of
our. So then you're like, okay, why don't we just fucking buy a building and do it ourselves, but do it on a bigger scale?
The crazy thing is, so this story has been told verbally, but not recorded actual sound bites. So this is probably potentially the best story here.
All right, get closer to the mic for this.
So,
one, then.
So we have, I'm at the office. I'll call it a Tuesday. There's a guy that is our manager, building manager, landlord guy, property manager, but he works the downstairs desk. So this guy, you've seen him. I don't want to say his name, but we'll call him maybe Brian because that's his name. And
Jim.
Yeah, no, this is Jim. Yeah, we'll call him Brian because that's his name. But this guy is a piece of shit. And he emergency ends our lease. So I get a letter, signed thing. This is a guy I see every minute. Mm-hmm. And I get this like, you know, registered letter, and I sign this thing, and I open this thing up, and it's like, your lease has been terminated. And we have like five floors. We have all these events going on. What the fuck's happening? And it's from the guy, and it says he's like uncomfortable situations or something. Josh, my attorney partner, we sit down with him like that day. 2 minutes into the conversation, we're like, dude, this guy's just hustling us for money.
Yeah.
So we were like, is this just about money? He's like, no, it's not just about money. It was just about money.
Right, of course it is.
In that conversation, our rent went up 40%. A lot of money.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't know we were doing these events, even though even though we were doing the events already and he's been to them. He didn't know we were going to sublease, even though he for sure did. And he just wanted to be part of it. I have him on video telling a brand that we're moving out, but if they wanted to keep their space in the showroom, he's going to keep the showroom going and they can just be part of his thing. You know, so
crazy.
I'm like, I take it on the chin again, punk rock record label. I just think that's how it goes. I tell all my friends about it. They're like, yeah, that's what happens to all of us. All of us get fucked over. You pay double rent on some of our
because everybody knows it's weed. So they're like, take the money.
Greedy. And I'm like, I'm blown away at this. I didn't realize this. And my BFF, Mike Magliano, Mags, the chef at the restaurant in the building, at the time was the chef at the Soho House. And he was doing all the food for all the Soho houses. So they'd fly him around, he'd go meet with the other chefs and whatever, you know, do like cool guy shit. And he was like, I got to go to Soho House Malibu. Do you want to take a ride with me? You know, go check it out. Sure, I'll go check it out. So we go out there. Mags is talking to this guy. This guy has a friend that's waiting for, you know, for Mags to stop talking. And I'm with Mags. So we're at both plus ones, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where like your friends are meeting each other, but you don't really want to talk to your friend's friend because you're never going to see them again. And
right.
So it's like, oh, cool. What's up, man? What's up? And it's like, you don't even want to, okay, what's your name? Okay. And like after a couple of minutes, it was like, okay, fine. I'll start talking to this guy. Cause now it's uncomfortable and we're just sitting here being weird. So like I grew up in Boston. He went to school in Boston. I had a record label. He has a record label. Now we both love weed. Okay. Maybe we're best friends. Right. You know? So I tell him about the landlord, and he goes, he's like, I want to light it to get the effect. This is exactly what happened. So we're at Soho House. I was like, you should come see my building. So like that day or the next day, maybe he came over, We're sitting on the roof, smoking a joint. He sees the whole building. He's like, this is insane. He's like, we're telling him, landlord, he goes, you should buy a building, bro. And I was like, well, what? I can't buy a building. I can't even buy a house in Los Angeles. I punk rock record label. And he's like, no, it's super easy. You buy a building. Like, if you get the tenants, we can buy a building, no problem. As if it was like a turkey sandwich.
Right.
I was like, okay, bro, like for sure. Like,
yeah.
So I don't believe you. Cannabis investment, so I definitely don't believe you.
Yeah.
And 3 months later, we bought the building.
So he's just some baller, or what does he do?
No, Aaron runs a company called, I guarantee you have the stuff. Yep, over there, over here, these thing, that frame. So every frame that basically is sold in America, he makes. And it's called, they don't have like a website, but it's like a 30-year-old company his dad started. Crazy. His dad's super sick, super progressive, like, you know, super positive on the weed stuff.
Yeah.
And Aaron now runs the company, family business.
Brothers?
No, but they sell there. They sell there. But every frame in Walmart, Target, Home Depot, like every frame you bought as like an art school kid or like growing up to put a poster in, or
Michael's,
100%, shit, everything at Michael's, all those frames they make.
Crazy.
And they own their own glass factory, and they don't even have like a social media. It's just like they just make money, you know, like they're just making frames. And he does that. And he was like, you know, but he knows the real estate game a little bit. And he knew, which I know now, is if you can get someone to cover all the leases, then the bank will give you the money to buy the house because it's getting paid for it back from them. Right. You know what I mean? So we start looking around, and he's going to fund it and stuff at this point. And we start looking at places that are 10,000 square feet or so. And I didn't want to be in downtown. It's my only thing. Only place I don't want to be is downtown. Right, that's it. I know we're downtown now. That's the thing. That's, of course, what happened to me. But I was like, any place but downtown, 10,000 square feet, and I want a coffee window that my guy Mags, that introduced me to things, he could like set up a coffee program, because what I wanted the most is to not hide.
So you're still thinking kind of small.
Yeah.
You're thinking like Hitman coffee size.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like I'm thinking like a little teeny space that like eight companies will share and will be cool, and we'll, you know what I mean? I'm thinking Inatech. I'm thinking what I had in Boston, you know? And what I had in Desmond was awesome, but Desmond's a $100 million building. Mm-hmm. I don't plan on that. I plan on like the, you know, one floor of the Desmond, or like that little thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And then like I was picturing literally specifically, because to paint the picture, Culver City, Bow Trust kind of thing with like a little window and there's, you know, coffee. And because what I didn't want to do, and why I love that you guys are here, and I don't want to hide. Like, we're paying real money. We're doing real work. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, what's going on up there? Those are the weed guys. I wanted to, like, serve the community.
Right.
So I wanted a coffee window. The prerequisite was something to serve the community. I wanted the neighbors to come by and be like, these guys are sick, and dollar coffee or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my God, you know? And we start looking around. Can't find anything. And Aaron's friend Sean is a real estate guy, and he has a couple properties. And he had his eye on a building. And they're like, Ram, I know you don't want to do downtown, but come see this building. Sean can't handle it himself. We can't handle it ourselves. So we could do this together. And I hate downtown, but we go there, and it's the Los Angeles Furniture Factory, 1913. I built so many places out growing up, so many houses, apartments, you know, offices, like ever. I love renovating. And when I saw it, I was like, this could be unbelievable. This is huge and crazy, but this could be unbelievable. And then I'm like a superstition guy, like, you know, so I'm Googling the address and looking at like what, maybe it's like haunted, or maybe it's cool, or maybe something, you know, whatever bad or could happen there. And I see something like 8 pages down on Google that's like Terminator tour. And I'm like, oh, Terminator, okay, interesting. And I click on it, and our building was in Terminator, like James Cameron.
The basement, right? You showed us. It's like filmed the arcade or something, what was it?
Well, I want to recreate the arcade in the basement, but yeah, the first floor, it's in Terminator, when they first interact with Arnold, and he gets the first like shooting him up scene, he gets blown out of this window and lands on his back. Then he sits up, and everyone's like, oh, and they run. That's our window. Yeah. That's our building. If you look up,
and I watched it like 2 weeks ago. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So Technoir, when she runs into the dance club, and he like follows her in, and you know, that's our building. So James Cannon was in our building. Outside is all done, and it's on the Terminator tour. And on Sarah Connor Day, we were there looking, and like a group of people showed up, all Terminatored out. And I'm obsessed with Terminator. My partner's gonna hate that I'm telling the story, but I just thought I'm like, this is a sick sign. Because again, back to Romanelli. Darren Romanelli taught me history and heritage are priceless, right? Like the storytelling, which you guys are experts in, is is where this is all going to be. That's what brand packaging is happening now. Logos, everyone has a cool logo, gives a shit. Storytelling is, that's it. That's the final frontier for these brands, is how to tell a story. That's what we're going to help them with, you know? And then Darren was the king of that. And the idea that something happened there, you know, like, and it was the Terminator tour, that's enough for me to like anchor around this like concept of this, you know, thing for me personally. Other people, my partner hates, he doesn't give a shit about Terminator, you know what I mean? But like, but to me, that's enough for me to like read into it and know that we can do something cool there. And ignorance is bliss. I had no idea what we were getting into. We're maybe bleep it out, but $1 million into it. We bought it for put five of that is the restaurant. The restaurant group is Felix, the people that own Felix and the Gusto Gusto restaurant group in Toronto, Janet Zuccherini. So top restaurateur of all of Canada, basically top. And she happens to be female. You know, she blows all the dudes out of the water, basically. She's top chef up there on the show. She was female entrepreneur of the year a couple years ago there. 9 restaurants in Toronto, one for 25 years, one for like 15 years, I believe. A few others for years. So like very hard in the restaurant industry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she took the ground floor. So we're opening tomorrow, actually, officially. You guys ate there the other day, but.
Salmon.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, right. Eat the salmon. Yeah, I didn't try the salmon. I did like a lot of pizzas. I'm a pizza guy. I'm a piece of shit, you know? But yeah, we have like essentially award-winning restaurant on the ground floor. We have an art gallery space, gift shop on the second floor. I'm figuring it out now who's going to take it. We have 2 floors of co-working spaces, which is high-rise has a space there. So there's 28 companies split over 2 floors. We have a brand showroom floor, so like a mini Hall of Flowers, basically, you know, for 10 brands. That has like Wonder Bread and The Cure Company and Originals, and they're already, so amazing brands already. On the co-working floors, besides you guys, there's Jason Pinsky, who did Bon Appetit for Vice, and there's Jason Beck, who, if there's a Mount Rushmore of cannabis made, Jason Beck's probably on it, you know. And then, of course, the number one agency in cannabis. Right, I'll baby. Give it to you guys. Or whatever.
In Canada.
You know, in Canada, yeah. Yeah, the number one Canadian-based, Southern California, Orange County-based agency. I'm so glad you guys moved to L.A., by the way.
Yeah.
I've been talking about me the whole time. I'm so bored of it. But, like, this is important, and I know, like, I like that you guys are documenting it. But I'm so glad you guys are up here. Oh, you guys do live down there?
I'm in Long Beach.
Yeah, Long Beach. Okay.
Which I'm closer to downtown than I am.
But you're here now, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm stoked on the building because it's like 25 minutes away.
Way easier for you.
Yeah.
Half the time, probably.
Less. Yeah. Half the time or less.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. So, LA is fucked. Took me an hour to get here. Okay. And then, and it's like, it's like this far on the map. The building, and then we have some space that's available, like for big companies. And then the top floor, penthouse, and the rooftop is a joint venture between the restaurant group and myself. We're calling it Alta, ALTA, and it's essentially like cannabis hospitality. So it's event space and food and drinks and, you know.
So wait, is there going to be a restaurant or no?
On the rooftop?
Yeah.
There won't be
or a kitchen.
There won't be a kitchen on the rooftop. There'll be the downs today to start. But downstairs, there's the kitchen you guys saw. Mm-hmm. But in the back, there's a crazy setup. And then the basement, there's a crazy setup. Just to feed the building. Mm. So they'll be bringing food up. And then they'll be able to like plate stuff upstairs. So there'll be they'll bring, you know, prepped food up and like, you know, doing like the salmon or whatever they do, like, you know, they do it for the parties, and they'll be like, you know, putting that stuff out, for people.
Got it.
So they'll be plating food but there won't be an actual kitchen up there.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you'll be doing like movie nights and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. The dream is that we do an event every night of the week. And hopefully next year we have 300 events every night. There's a party and it's, you know, it's a brand release party or a product thing or a bud tender appreciation thing, you know, or award show, you know, or chili cook-off, you know what I mean? I can see some weddings happening there. I could see some photo shoots happening there. I mean, the space, you guys have seen the top floor. It's built as like a gallery,
right?
You know, so it's really
blank canvas,
beautiful, white box for people to come in and take over and produce anything they want. And then, of course, we're producing a series of events there. You know, we're doing like a weekly event there at this point. Mm-hmm. And then...
So that donuts and pizza, that's every Friday.
Donuts and pizza every other Friday morning, magic hour. And donuts and pizza is just a ripoff of Dr. Romanelli, my mentor, we did an event called Pancake Epidemic. Mm-hmm. We were above IHOP. He would get pancakes from downstairs. Stumptown Coffee was a client. And he would invite all his friends over who are the craziest people ever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucking... All the Spider-Mens were there.
Yeah.
You know, Cool Keith, Everlast, Action Bronson, all at one time. Everlast is doing jump around, acoustic guitar. This is 9 or 10 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, on and it's just Cool Keith and Action Bronson to play. There's no one else watching.
Yeah.
It's just like, who's that? I'm like, oh, that's that Everlast? Oh, shit. Who's with him? Oh, my God. Emily Ratajkowski. Oh, my God. Hiroshi Fujiwara. Takashi Murakami, I mean, the craziest Japanese people of all time, basically. Of
artists, yeah.
RZA, fucking Jeff, the Duder, I'm like, Jeff Bridges, fucking. I didn't see Kanye there, but I'm sure he was there. You know, it's LA. So yeah. It was like the biggest of the biggest. Seth Rogen's, yeah. You know, like, craziest people. So, but every morning he did this 9 a.m. to 11, pancakes, coffee. To me, it was so brilliant because it's like a caffeine fueled event. A lot of parties, like we do the nighttime parties, you do the nighttime parties. Maybe they're networking, but people don't even remember what they did.
It's a whole different vibe doing the daytime morning stuff.
So different, sure. You know. Yeah. And I want people to be inspired and get to their office already have eaten some food, and like they can just like work for the rest of the day. But they get there at noon or whatever, and they can like
they're all juiced up from the conversations.
Yeah, exactly. And then people that are in the building. You know, they're already killing it because they're like, they have their offices above or below and they're like fishing. They're like going downstairs, grabbing someone, let's go upstairs to my office. And like, and so they're like cutting deals and doing work. But my events that I'm producing are buyer focused.
Right.
Like I'm trying to bring as many buyers in, dispensary owners, you know, first press after that. And press to me would be like celebrities and, you know, Instagrammer and YouTube people and, you know, traditional press, of course, but those two buckets, you know, media and buyers. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I feel like that's why our businesses complement each other so well. Cause you guys like murder it on the B2B. And then we have like the B2C and B2 bud tender, you know? And it's like, that partnership's like huge. It's like perfect.
Yeah. I was going to say the pancake epidemic, that was the, probably one of the first kind of events like that we've ever been to. And
you went to it.
And so I don't know if you remember this, but this is where we met you. So
that was before we started the agency.
Hilarious story.
Yeah. Oh, so, let's go into this shit.
Okay. So we launched Two Girls, One Bong. It starts cracking. We're getting like crazy view. A lot of people hitting us up, whatever. I don't know what to do.
Great show.
We're doing merch.
It was a great show.
What are you just doing? Embroidery, doing merch, not doing anything weed related.
Yep.
Well, obviously we have Hires Clothing as a brand. We're doing that, but it's all clothing.
That was weedy always, or so you had some weed designs?
No, we were Karma Loop. It was like streetwear, skate inspired weed clothing, like Huff. It was like Huff shit, inspired Huff shit, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it was all clothing.
R.I.P.
And from that, we started the merch to whatever, make our clothing, make other people's clothing, whatever. Anyways, we launched the YouTube channel to promote the clothing, right? We launched Two Girls, One Bong. Second episode in cracks. We got 30,000 subscribers in one weekend. And then our shit just 100,000 subscribers in 6 months. Like we'd get like 40,000-50,000 views like in a couple like the first like 6 hour upload of like it was just like they're just like cracking like out of nowhere. So I'm like, I don't know what the fuck we're doing, you know what I mean? So I Google cannabis marketing agency, cannabis media agency, cannabis whatever the fuck. And I literally email every single one, and you guys were like number 6 or 7 or something.
Cool. Thank you.
Whatever you guys were, this is like eight years ago.
We'll call it 4.
I think you're number. Yeah. Hey, you guys up? Cold email, like, hey guys, what's up? I have this YouTube channel. Like, love to connect.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Did I respond?
Casper.
Casper's my guy from Kinko's.
Okay.
Damn. So he's the plug, bro.
Casper, dude. That's our Casper guy Adams. Right there.
Yeah. Casper. Shout out to Casper Adams.
He's like, I'm going to set you up with a meeting with Rama in like 2 weeks or something, right?
Yeah, amazing.
Okay, I'm like, dope, cool. The next week, completely unrelated ears, Justin Williams. Mm. He's like, yo, you got to come to this pancake thing with me and meet Rama, like fucking whatever.
Dude, this is like a year of him telling about this
pancake. And we have no idea where we're going. Yeah. We're like, all right, that sounds cool. Like, let's go. And so we go, whatever. He introduces us to you and we're like, Green Street, whatever. And I'm like, I think I have a meeting with you next week. And like, sure enough, like I literally ended up meeting you there a week before I was supposed to actually meet you through a cold email. It's just like such a random story. And then I think we ended up having a meeting like a week or two later.
But we go to walk into we walk down the hall and we go into your office and there's a little Green Street sign in there. And it's just like, what the fuck?
Like
we walk in and Casper's like at the desk or something like that.
Yeah.
He's like, you're here a week early, Aaron.
Yeah.
Really? No, that's amazing. And then what was happening that day at Pancake? Do you know?
It was, you were just doing a little mixer. It was like a Sunday or some morning.
Friday morning. Some
morning mixer. Yeah.
I wanted to call mine the crumpet conspiracy.
Yeah.
You know, off the pancake epidemic, but I knew that Darren would be upset, so I'm calling it donuts and pizza.
Yeah.
But it's really the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. People that know are like, it's an epidemic, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, pancake epidemic was so unbelievable, and this is why it's so good, and this is like, and again, huge inspiration for me, right? Like not just this event, but the way of thinking. Darren was like so not selfish, where the craziest thing at Pancake business-wise that I saw was Frank Sinatra from Stussy, the owner of Stussy, you know, and Edison Chen. Edison owns Clot and Juice, and he's the number one most important, like, you know, Chinese, Hong Kong human. Like, I said, hey, what's Edison like? How big is he? They said he's like... you know, Justin Timberlake, but more famous, you know, and it's just like, oh, fuck, he's the face of Pepsi and shit like that, you know, over there. And they met, and Edison's like, how come there's not Stussy stores in China? And Edison's like, let's open them. And like a week later, there was like 5 stores open. It was like, and I'm like, Darren, those guys are doing a deal for Stussy in China. I could retire on it. Like, get me 2 points. I'll never have to work again. And he's like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, you don't want to get in there? You should get in there, Darren. Like, and he'd be like, nah, that's their thing. Like, you know, they'll remember that they met here and, you know, we did the thing. And that blew my mind so much, that like non-selfishness of it, that he just let them own the space and do it. It changed everything. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, it's still hard for me to do that a little bit. I want to like get my cut always, which is the weed industry always is. But you realize if you can just like set it up and let them, you know, like that's what I'm doing with the building. I'm like surrendering it to the community. I'm going to let them come in and do their thing. And if they can win from it, then... they'll be like, we met, where'd we meet? Oh, at Green Street. They'll tell this story like we're telling now or whatever. So.
It's just bigger than small bit than just little things. And it's
not the immediate, like that our favorite three fucking, the immediate ROI, you know what I mean? It's like, just let the shit happen. Let it play out. If you're doing it correctly, it's going to pan out properly. If you're putting the right people, you know what I mean? And providing value. Yeah. Like
collisions. Like how many people here have $1 million deals have gone down at our house. And like, we don't give a, we've either plugged them in or we never even knew it happened out on our deck.
That's right.
We don't give a shit.
Yeah, I love creating the collisions. I use that same term. Yeah. I love that.
That's some like the Zappos dude or something like that.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. He's Tony Shay's RIP. He's fucking incredible too. So the craziest thing with Pancake, to wrap that up, is it's an experiment, right? And every time it would be different. He'd have like the weirdest stuff come on, or this weird thing happen, or let a brand do something, or Money Mark, who was in the Beastie Boys, wrote all the songs with them. He one time came and he told us a story of how MCA always wanted to record a song, but have the tape loop from the machine through a hauled out cantaloupe back to the machine again. So he did that live in the space. So at like 9 a.m, Money Mark's setting up this thing. He's like poking a hole in a cantaloupe, and everyone's watching around him, and like, they're like, what the fuck's going on? And it was like, it was just these crazy weird experiments, you know? Right. But it was like, but it happened so much, and online it looked like it was a real cafe or something, beautiful build out. And these Korean distributors for, I want to say Stussy or Undefeated maybe, showed up, and, they're like, where's Pancake Epidemic? And we want to go to Pancake Epidemic. And I'm like, oh, no, it's right there. It's the corner of the office. It would be like here if you're like, oh, just over there. Mm-hmm. And no, they're like, no, like the pancake one that we see. And we're like, no, that's it. It's just that. It's just the office.
Yeah.
They've opened 5 cafes in Seoul.
Crazy.
There's in the biggest malls in the country. There's Pancake Epidemic restaurant and cafes.
What?
There's lines. Coffee's crazy there right now. When they opened, there was hundreds of people in line to get coffee from them. And it was just an experiment that Darren just was like, we're above IHOP. We're going to do pancakes on Fridays.
Yeah.
And it was like $50 in pancakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Egg Slut or some shit.
Yeah. Egg Slut. Those guys killed it. Alvin. He came, he used to open up right across from our little office actually. Mm-hmm. But, and I bet you that wasn't even by mistake, but it was like the culture and community, and you know, we're all learning of this stuff, you know. So we were talking about before we started recording the podcast today, like, you know, we're just applying what we've learned from these other industries and cultures to cannabis to try to figure it out. But you know, thankfully the people that I've got to work with have been like these crazy inspirational people, and like positive, super positive. And like growing up, you know, back to the punk thing, there's a band called Bad Brains that coined this term, like positive mental attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's me. I have the PMA.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's my life now, you know? So, So I'm just trying to do that and work hard. No one wants to do hard work out here in California. Nobody.
That's what we figured.
You know, it's crazy to me. So I'll just keep doing it. As long as it doesn't snow, we're good.
Yeah.
And
festival.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's close it out with the festival. Let's talk about the festival before we
festival. Okay. You guys, let's talk about something. Let's talk about something else for a second. You guys talk for a minute.
Just like 9,000 fucking.
What are you guys doing? How are you guys?
That's literally the answer anybody asks. Like, so what are you guys up to? It's just
I can't even explain. Yeah. I don't even try to. I just, oh, yeah. It's good. We're good.